Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Things that are in that letter. The two of them are in our studio. John Williams here in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. is here. Jacqueline L. Jackson, his mother, is here too. The book that I guess you'd say they've co-published is Loving You, Thinking of You, Don't Forget to Pray, Letters to My Son in Prison. I read from some of Jacqueline's letters just before the news. If you're new to Chicago, Congressman Jackson went to jail for a couple of years for improperly using campaign funds, served his time, and while he was in jail, his mother wrote him a letter every single day, which we didn't know about. Both of you, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us, John.
Oh, thank you, John.
I said co-published. Whose idea was it to publish these letters?
It was my idea. And I
think
initially,
it was April and Nicole, yeah, when you were compiling it. Let me...
Yeah. Okay, Mom,
yes.
Please.
The letter...
It's your mom. You got a letter to
her. Well,
it's her
book. He told me, he said, I want to take you out for my birthday. And I agreed. And we went out, and he started taking pictures of me. He said, you know, I know how you hate surprises, so I guess I need to level with you.
This is your son?
My son. He said, there are so many pages of letters that you sent to me. I want to self-publish them and present them to you in the form of a book. He has some friends from A&T, his school down in North Carolina. Two young ladies, sisters, and they said, well, we'll assemble them for you and kind of put the dates and get the sort them out. They were the ones who said, you can't just publish this and give it to your mother. I didn't realize somebody else was reading the
letters. When you wrote the letters, you didn't intend them for posterity or
absolutely
publication.
Absolutely not. You don't know how many we had to pull.
Did you then talk to her? Really? I mean, because there's some stuff in here that I think are going to... I won't say you burned bridges, but I think there's people reading this and going, really?
Yes,
really?
Yes.
Jacqueline, did you have
yes,
to?
Yes, yes.
John, in the self-published version, there are a lot more letters because...
Really?
My intention was just to provide one book for my mother. March 11th, 2018 was my birthday, and we were having dinner in downtown Chicago. My mother and father took me out, and I said, Mom, I was in a very dark place when I entered prison. I was ashamed. I was humiliated. I was hurt. I had fallen a long way from where I was, and my mother knew that. And quite frankly, when I left town on my way to Butner and then Montgomery.
Butner is where you were incarcerated.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to be left alone. I just didn't want any more communication because I was kind of overwhelmed. And I told my mother to leave me alone. And I think that most men incarcerated want to go through this phase of just being left alone.
Her early letters were like, are you getting these? Hello, I haven't heard from you.
And she said, I'm going to write you every day. I'm going to keep in touch with you because I'm not going to abandon you.
Did you read the letters when they came in?
I read them. And I was so overwhelmed by the number of letters that she was sending me that I began sharing them with men in prison who were receiving no letters at all, who hadn't heard from family members. And it became their connection. At mail call at 4 o'clock, after the 4 o'clock count, the guard would say...
Their connection to what?
To family, to people on the outside.
Even if it's not their family?
The guard would say at 4 o'clock every day, across the country, in prisons all over the country, a guard yells, mail call, mail call. And he would say, Jackson, Jackson, Jackson. As all the inmates gathered, they would be gathering to receive a card, a communication, something from some loved one, and mine were just coming and coming and coming, and there were times when my head would be going up, John, and their heads would be going down, and I said, hey, wait a minute, come here, let's see what my mama's saying today. And I would just read it to the guys, and I was so overwhelmed about a week ago when one of the men that I served with actually sent me a picture of the letters of the book that he had purchased, because he remembered reading the letters in prison, and that was a connection for him. And I asked Mom if she wanted to see them beyond this, and she said, I think we can help a lot of people.
So not all of the letters were published, but you speak candidly about your relationship with your husband, about how you feel about some relatives and friends.
You're going to get me in trouble.
I didn't publish the book.
Let them get the book first. But what we are concerned about is the intention of the book. I'm hoping that these stories and these little letters can be shared with many of the guys who are incarcerated today. So they can, when they do get visitors, they can encourage people. A letter you can hold. A phone call disappears. You have to kind of go over what did they say. But as you see, these letters were about my condition, what I was doing, because there's no re-entry program created for guys who are incarcerated. And when they come back to the new community, especially if they've been gone 2 to 3 years, technology has changed. Many people are deceased. And they should feel a sense of belonging in that community and still connected.
Well, that's what we were talking about off the air. I said, even if you two weren't famous, you know, it's kind of interesting to sort of be the fly on the wall between your exchanges. I think it's instructive to know what would a mother say to a son in prison, or what would a parent say to an adult child in any circumstances. It's just interesting to see how other people relate to each other. And then I reflect on how I communicate with my parents or I with my kids. I don't know if you intended that. Clearly you did not. You were writing to him. And maybe when you published the book, you didn't expect that. But I think this book works on many levels. You know, it's interesting to know how people interact with each other. And that we have some of the same thoughts. Here's you on February 15th.
Oh, my goodness. Now.
Loving you always. And by the way, you begin so many letters like this. My son, don't forget to pray. Put on the full armor of God. I hope to see you this weekend if all goes well. Today, I spent the entire day visiting every Walmart in the area trying to find for my mom the elastic bottom jogging pants. I've not been able to find for her therapy session a size large Fruit of the Loom jogging pants here in Washington, D.C. or Maryland. I am on my way to the hospital and I am tired.
And I had so much support. I didn't realize that's one of the letters I skipped. I didn't realize
the name. You didn't know the name of this book. It's really interesting. And then the next day you write, my son, you are always on my mind. How are you? Today, Mr. Corey and I searched once more for Mom's jogging pants. And I'm sure you're reading these going, oh, my God, you know, a letter from Mom, and I'm reading about Grandma's jogging pants, Fruit of the Loom Large. Really? Really? I mean, what was your reaction when you were reading the mundane like this? Did you appreciate that?
You know, I did. I did because I appreciated...
He has to know my mother.
...connectedness. And my grandmother was a very, very special lady, and I was kind of overwhelmed because of her health issues and the fact that my mother was also providing for her, and she was also trying to communicate with me, and she was trying to share with me what was actually happening in real time. And she really didn't want, she knew that I was incarcerated, she knew I was in prison, but she didn't want the prison to be in me, and she wanted to connect me to what was happening in real time on the regular. And
This stuff is in some ways is valuable, isn't it?
One of the letters I said, consider yourself a detainee, because my mother said, we don't want him to come out as a prisoner. Now, you have to talk to him, Jackie, so he doesn't come out as a prisoner. So in many ways, I was trying to prepare him to come out with his head up. If you've served your time, you should be expunged. And you should be on with your life. You should be able to go back to school and find housing and lead a life and contribute to society. So that's what I wanted my son to do. And while visiting the prisons, there's so many intelligent and bright young people there. Yeah. And we have to think about what are we going to do with all this talent.
Mama, let me share something with you that I don't know if you fully appreciate was actually also one of the realities of your letters. I read and had read many times, but I read again in prison Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. And here he objectively is looking at what's taking place in the context of Auschwitz and confinement. And he talked about objectification. So when I had a job in prison mopping, I would mop required once a day, but I would mop three or four times a day because the opportunity to use the mop and to dance with the mop was like dancing with my wife. It was like being outside of the prison. It was being outside of yourself for that moment. I was listening the other day, John, when some people were making fun of Bill Cosby in prison as Dr. Huxtable. Well, there are men in prison who've only known him as Dr. Huxtable, and they've never had health care. So a certain unreality becomes reality. While cleaning the bathroom one day in prison, Mom, a young man had been transferred, actually an older gentleman had been transferred from carpentry to the restroom detail. And he said, "Congressman, will you call President Obama and tell him that they need to move me back to carpentry? Now you got access." And I'm sitting there looking at him like, man, I'm here with you. I don't have access to anyone. But in his mind, he was in prison with a congressman.
Mm-hmm. Well, this letter was a reality check, or these letters
were a reality check.
I suspect were a reality check for these people. I want to just ask you to comment, Jacqueline, on this. July 13th, 2014, it's late in the book, so relatively later in your incarceration, and halfway through that letter that begins, "My son, how are you? I hope all is well. Today was a very good day. We thank God for you, and we all prayed for your safety at Operation Push at a meeting." And then down towards the middle, you write, "Jesse, we are not the reason you are here. As a matter of fact, we've always tried to save you from others and yourself. This time, you were too far away. This was your choice. Well, good news. I bought you some fishing lures from a house sale. I hope you remember Dr. Hurst, president of Malcolm X College. The people who live there now are moving away and have as much stuff as I have. I'll save the lures, about 100 of them, until you return. Perhaps we can fry the fish you catch with them and add some grits and cheese for breakfast. I miss you so much. I love you all the time. I love you, Mom." But when you said, "As a matter of fact, we tried to save you from others and yourself, you are there, this was your choice," what were you talking about?
Well,
do you remember specifically what you were talking about?
We are on a journey. My son had become a congressman, and he was in another life with new responsibilities.
In jail, you mean?
No, when he was in Congress.
Prior to incarceration.
So we were kind of distant at that time because his life was not like ours. We had an organization that we were serving, and he had a political life in Washington, D.C. And oftentimes, and sometimes we even disagreed with positions that that were taken, but he would say to us, "Honestly, you don't know what the body is like, and sometimes you have to compromise. You give a little on this, and you take a little on that." Being an activist, you know, most activists know nothing but charge. We're street fighters, you know. No matter what this day is, the storm, we're sitting out somewhere. That's a different life from people who make decisions being in a room together.
Yeah.
So that created some distance and oftentimes some misunderstandings. So we've been going at it and coming back, but we agreed to disagree with each other. We could still have Thanksgiving, Christmas, and the children over. But sometimes the lines were drawn in the sand, like most families. The problem with most families, they can't come back together and agree to move on. So when I made the statement, I was saying, you have a responsibility for your life where you were, where this happened. And you must assume the responsibility for it.
Was that hard for you to hear, or were you on the same page when you read that?
I think, again, I was in a dark place. And I accepted responsibility for my behavior. I had been convicted of spending about $75,000 a year for 10 years beyond my means. And I had to reflect upon it, the shame of it all, the embarrassment of it all. I thought I was doing a pretty good job as a congressman. I had rarely missed a vote.
A bad politician.
I had rarely missed a vote. And, you know, my mother and I have gone back and forth on, you know, the advantages and the disadvantages of what living in two cities means, having children and trying to operate a household and also maintain a certain expectation and quality of life. Those are all my errors, and I accept fully the shortcomings of my ways.
And
it was painful.
That's why I love you.
So, because I'm candid, honest about it. I did
that's
wrong.
That's why I love you.
Well, thank you, Mom.
This is the young man I want to see.
I don't have anything.
Kisses.
No. Last time I kissed you, it ended up on television, and I said I had lipstick on. No, I'm not doing that anymore.
You know we're on the radio right now.
Yes, I sure do.
It's 151 on WGN. Speaking of all of that, though, we'll pause here, and I just want you two to address one more thing. And that was a point in the book a couple of times, but not too much. I sort of respected the restraint you showed in your writing the letters to your son, or maybe in your editing of them and not including it all. But there is a point, though, where you talk to him about marriage and about the need to keep the family together for the sake of the children, if not for the husband and wife. So it's something you've learned and something he needs to appreciate. And I'd like your reflections on that in a minute. Jesse Jackson Jr., the congressman in our studio with his mother, Jacqueline Jackson. She wrote him a letter every day he was in jail. Published now, it's titled, Loving You, Thinking of You, Don't Forget to Pray, Letters to My Son in Prison. Every day he was in jail, Jacqueline Jackson wrote a letter to her son, Jesse Jackson Jr., the four-term congressman?
I think I was 8 terms.
Pardon me.
Eight
terms.
Yeah.
And at one point in there, and I've highlighted it, but I'm not going to take the time to read much from it, but you talk to him about his wife coming over to visit and the kids and how he needs to get his life right for the sake of the children, if not for the marriage. Am I recollecting that correctly?
I believe that marriage is for family, and it is a business. It's a small corporation. Many of us, when they say that our wealth is accumulated in our homes and our cars and our property, there's an business institution that houses all of those things. The people who are the most vulnerable in the marriage are the children. And I believe that children should always, their welfare should be prioritized.
So if you're having trouble with your husband or you're having trouble with
your wife, and you
ever so obliquely refer to that at times in the book, and I'm like, I wonder where's she going to go next with this?
Oh, but now I want for clarity, he's mine, and I belong to him.
And you avow your love for and support for Jesse Sr.
56 years I've been supporting him.
Even when he's disappointed you, even when he's failed you. And you say you do this because of the children.
Well, I do this because I love him. I love him, but to love someone doesn't mean that you are taken advantage of. We have to remember we're all individuals, but I cannot allow what he does with his life to impact mine. We come together at the table as one, but when we get up, he has to make life decisions, and so do I. And I don't allow his life decisions to violate my life decisions.
I want to comment on this, Mom, because you wrote several letters where you were concerned about my children actually visiting me in prison.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we've ever talked about it publicly, but my children, and under the circumstances, really completed me. And in a psychological sense, I think that I don't think anyone can run from the reality of the fact that they have a loved one who's incarcerated. They confront it in school. They confront it amongst their teachers. They confront it amongst their peers. They experience it in the invitations they receive and they don't receive. you're sending an invitation to the congressman's child, and the congressman's child comes to the birthday party. It's different than sending an invitation to the family with the father in prison. It's different.
We are out of time. What is your... How are you doing? You look good.
I feel great.
Mentally and physically, are you well? Yeah, because when you were incarcerated, your physical and mental health were both in doubt.
Yeah.
Are you doing okay?
I was depressed, man. I was down. And my mother's letters helped pull me back from a very dark place.
Physically, you're well, too?
Fantastic. Yeah. Be better.
You wrote the introduction to this book, this collection of letters from your mother to you. And at the end of your introduction, you wrote... and of course, her chitterlings, glory be to God. So you wrote about how much you love your mother, and you appreciated that. But then you signed it sincerely, 32453-016. Why did you sign it that way?
That's my number. 32453016 is what we're known as in the system.
I understood that, but you chose not to sign your name there. Instead, you put the number. I wonder why you did that.
In fact, John, I actually considered an autobiography with 32453016 as the number to make the point that men are not just stripped of what they've done wrong, but they're also stripped of their names, they're stripped of their humanity, they're reduced to a number in the system, and I'm going to drive that home in part two of my existence.
Congratulations to both of you in your repaired or even better relationship and in what turned out to be a fun and interesting book on many, many levels. And you've inspired a lot of us, I think, to reconsider connecting with the written word to people that are important to you. This book does that as well. Oh, thank you. By the way,
yeah, Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble
is where you can pick this
Do you want to sell some books to you? So the name of the book is Loving You, Thinking of You, Don't Forget to Pray. You guys are heading over to the Barnes and Noble on Rush?
On Rush and then on Clybourne, just to do a pop-up, sign the books that they have in their inventory. And
shortly,
keep it
like
moving.
In the next hour or
in
so.
The next 15, 20 minutes maybe.
Downtown, if not Rush downtown, and pick up the copy of the book and meet these people. Thanks for coming
by. Thank you
thanks for
so
having
much.
Us, and thank you
thank
for the
you.
Interview.